Honda believes you should expect more from your car. That's why the 2018 Civic LX sedan has more horsepower than a 2018 Sentra S. Here's a comparison. The Civic LX sedan. Now the Sentra S. If you want more from your car, come into your local Honda dealer and test drive the 2018 Civic today.
Good morning and welcome to Liberty Never Sleeps. Make sure to follow the show at our website at libertyneversleeps.com. Make sure to follow our Twitter feed at Real Liberty Tom and join us on Facebook at Real Liberty Never Sleeps on facebook.com. Today's show is going to be kind of an odd show because with the Kavanaugh thing, I felt it necessary to talk today a little bit about the psychology behind it. And the reason is because there's a lot more going on here than just some women accusing Brett Kavanaugh of rape. There are a lot of things that are going on right now, but it's the thing that everyone's talking about, and that's part of the problem. Because everything is so overblown, it's so ridiculous, and people are acting so hysterical about this, that it needs to be talked about. First of all, Brett Kavanaugh is not accused of raping anyone. You need to understand that. And all three of these allegations that have come forward, none of the women said they were raped by this man. The first one, the original accusation, was filed in a letter from someone other than the accuser, somewhere other than Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, that was presented to Senator Feinstein as a possible reason not to nominate Brett Kavanaugh. The accusation involved was of repressed memory in a therapist session by a psychologist. Now, I don't know if the psychologist provided it or second party provided it or Dr. Ford. They have not released the notes or letter itself, which suggested that Brett Kavanaugh was not a savory character because at some point in high school, he was in a situation where laughing with another person who was identified as his friend, Mr. Judge, who in an incident pushed her down, made like sexually suggestive moves, and along with another boy or several people, that fell onto a bed, and then in the melee that ensued, or the laughing and struggling melee, she managed to get away, went to the bathroom, locked the door, and that was the end of it. There was no accusation of rape. That you could question it as attempted rape, but by all accounts, from what I read, It's kind of a situation where everyone was drunk, everyone got out of hand and made crude and sexually suggestive moves with their body. In other words, one of those pushing sessions, you know, where everyone was goofing on everyone else. Now, in those situations, women can interpret it as getting out of hand, and that's how rapes do happen. I won't deny that. But in the repressed memory session, she said, well, it might have been Brett Kavanaugh along with these other people that were there. The other person, Mr. Judge, filed the letter saying it was not Brett Kavanaugh. He did not do that, and he was not in the room at the time. He said he was in the room at the time. There was a second woman that came forward that said or suggested that Brett Kavanaugh, she had seen him acting irresponsibly and basically getting out of hand drunk and being mean with women. She does not suggest that Brett Kavanaugh raped anyone. There was a third person now that suggests that who is represented by a Michael Avenatti, that somehow Brett Kavanaugh was the ringleader of a rape ring. Now, that one has not been given too much credibility. Now, all of these things, in all of them, there is no direct evidence presented. None. And yet, somehow, everyone is saying Brett Kavanaugh is a rapist. Brett Kavanaugh shouldn't be in the Supreme Court. No evidence, no witnesses, no corroborating. No one can state an exact time and place when Kavanaugh was who did these things. No one can state that they saw definitively that there was a rape. No one can state definitively that they were raped. No police report was filed in any of these cases. No FBI investigation of Brett Kavanaugh turned up anything that even suggests a hint of being involved in a rape ring. And I was watching these cases and reading all of the statements and all of the media reports that have been swirling. All of the celebrities now that are jumping on the social media hysteria. And it struck me as something very similar. Remarkably similar. I lived through it. Back in the 1980s in California, there was a case in Manhattan Beach, California, a rather salacious case of child sex abuse. Several daycare workers, it was called the McMartin Daycare Center, were accused of raping a child, anally penetrating a child. It was basically brought by a person. It was a Judy Johnson, a mother of one of the Manhattan Beach, California preschool's young students. She reported to her doctor that she thought her son had been anally penetrated at the McMartin preschool. And that there were people at the McMartin preschool that were behaving in odd ways, and her child had told her that. And the hysteria that surrounded it was the same as it is in the Kavanaugh case. And I'm not going to suggest any guilt or innocence, but I want to discuss the similarities in the cases. So let's take a break, because it's relevant because of what happened in the McMartin case, why it happened, and the subsequent fallout from it. It's remarkably similar in both the psychological effects, the causes for it, and what may be the fallout from it. We'll be right back after this brief break.
See my old friend Martin. Can you tell me where he's gone? He freed a lot of people, but it seemed good they died.
Gifts of all sizes help to ensure that Liberty Never Sleeps remains a relevant, vital resource across our nation. More than 70% of the funding for Liberty Never Sleeps comes from our listeners through the generosity of membership support by donating at patreon.com. Join our Insiders Club for $10 a month and gain access to private shows and editorial columns. Go to libertyneversleeps.com and click on the Donate Now button at the top of the page or on the button at our Facebook site. Thank you for your continued support.
It's love, sweet love. No, not just for some, but for everyone.
And we're back. You know, a lot of people have been saying that this Kavanaugh case reminds me of the Salem witch trials. That's the most obvious example of a case where everyone was being crucified and murdered and horrible things happened. But the Salem witch trials involved a situation where there were a lot of people burned at the stake. I don't know if it's going that far, but it is a similarity in the sense that it's a witch hunt and that it's mass hysteria. And I'm not going to suggest whether Kavanaugh is guilty or not. That is something for you to decide by looking at the evidence. The problem is that the evidence is so scant. And it reminds me of a case, actually, a literal case, that happened in the United States in the West California in the early 80s, 1983, I believe the case was, where a woman comes forward and says, my son was penetrated or raped by a Mr. Ray at this school. And it turned out there was a Ray Buckey, who was the grandson of the founder of the school, Virginia McMartin, and the son of the administrator, Peggy McMartin. And it began when her child said the son had painful bowel movements. Brought it to the doctor, and there was scant evidence at the doctor's office of this happened. But Johnson persisted. She went to the police department. And she made a rather odd accusation. She made accusations that she believed her son was somehow raped or abused. And the suggestion included no evidence. She could not provide a time or a place where she thinks that she was done. Johnson's son denied the suggestion that his preschool teachers had molested him. It was others who said that the abuse was confirmed. In fact, it involved a session with a child psychologist who was brought in as an expert on the case. A lot of people were arrested, and the total charge was something like 300 or 400 counts against Peggy McMartin and her McMartin family. As a result, the child care facility itself was destroyed. And the accusations began to mount. As Johnson came out and said that this happened, other parents came forward too. And the reason they came forward was because the police department, taking this wild accusation, which was unsubstantiated without evidence or any other corroborating cases or witnesses, they wrote a letter to all of the parents at the McMartin School preschool and asked them specific questions as, did your son ever act weird or absurd, or has your son ever said anything to you about these kind of situations, if they were reported to us? Now, it was 200 parents. 8 parents responded and said, yeah, my son said something like this. And so the police then interviewed them with child psychologists, which later on were found to be quite leading. And they charged the McMartin family with hundreds of counts of child abuse, as well as child molestation and whatnot. Ray Buckey was jailed. He was then released and then rejailed when more charges came forward. And I found the similarities very disconcerting when I heard about the Brett Kavanaugh, and I started reading about the accusations and reading about the very little evidence. In both cases, it involved a psychological technique called repressed memory, where someone interviews the victim and talks about their memory in a lot of different ways, and then they say, oh yeah, I remember this and remember that. Now, today, most of these repressed session therapies, which occurred in the 90s, became very prevalent in the 90s, have been discredited. Because psychologists have found that the human mind, when discussing previous memories, is very pliable. It can often bring false memories. There was a number of tests done to people about getting lost in a mall. There were other psychological examinations done. And in almost all of the cases, people could be encouraged, or how should I say, the memory itself becomes imprinted on their mind, even though it never happened. They would find that during this process, you could put a memory in someone's mind that never really happened, or can be similar to a situation that they experienced and then blown up and exaggerated far beyond what the original incident was. There is no doubt that I believe that all three of these women have some sort of memory that has been brought forth. The question is the validity of it in a criminal case, or in an accusation against somebody who has an otherwise impeccable record. it also involves a situation where it's done for political reasons. In the case of the McMartin preschool trial, the investigating attorney at the time was facing a very difficult and long election. The reporter who was bringing the case forth, I believe it was in William Sants. I think Sats or Sants. He presented a case in the media on the local news station, and which got tremendous ratings. And he presented an unchallenged view. In other words, he didn't present the case as a journalist. He presented it as an advocate. He became personally involved in a romantic relationship with Key McFarland, the social worker at the Children's Institute, who was interviewing the children. And so his personal involvement was questionable. You had other people for political motivations to gain from this situation. A lot of people made a lot of money. They got grants. They got donations. Substantial funds were transferred to people investigating the cases. Psychologists who would do reports. And in the whole scheme of things, there became a hysteria about it. The letter now viewed by the police sent to these parents was irresponsible, because what happens is this. The letter basically makes broad and general accusations, and then people latch onto it out of fear and mass hysteria. This happened in many times in history. If you look up cases of mass hysteria, they're almost invariably predicated upon an early wild accusation about some sort of crazy or hysterical thing, and then other people latch onto it after the fact. In other words, the crime comes out, or a situation like in the McMartin case or in the Brett Kavanaugh case, where somebody makes an accusation that is unsubstantiated, irrelevant, no evidence, and then other people who never made this accusation before, never made any mention of it to anyone else, says, oh yeah, this happened to me too. And usually it's predicated by a couple of people who have been to psychologists who have psychological imbalances. For the record, Mrs. Johnson, or Judy Johnson, was diagnosed and hospitalized for acute paranoid schizophrenia. In 1986, during the trial, she died in 1986. The trial went, I think, until 1990. It took that long. It was one of the most expensive trials in Los Angeles County history. She was found dead in her home from complications of chronic alcoholism. This was even before the preliminary hearings concluded. There were substantial credibility issues with Judy Johnson, with her reports. In fact, at one point, she claimed that Ray Buckey was flying around the room. And yet police, journalists, and everyone ignored that. There were a number of cases that followed the McMartin case. False allegations of satanic rituals, child abuse, child molestation. In all of these cases that varied, they were in a number of states, but mostly in California. In all of the cases, the people in the daycare center, the workers and the teachers, were all exonerated, all had substantial civil settlements later. Some, like Ray Buckey, spent years in jail before they were completely exonerated on all charges. There are people today that still believe that McMartin and Buckey and all these were child molesters, that they were engaging in satanic rituals. It got crazy for those of you who lived through it. As a matter of fact, during the case, some of these repressed memory sessions involved satanic rituals in underground secret tunnels at the McMartin preschool. And one crazy person, well, I shouldn't say crazy, irresponsible, said that they took a metal detector or an underground scanner and scanned underneath the basement or concrete slab the preschool was on and said, yeah, there's underground tunnels. Even though an expert said the slab had been in place since 1940, they broke up the slab and dug underground and found nothing. That's how crazy it was. There were so many people capitalizing on this case. And there was, in that time, there was no social media. There was no Twitter. There was no Facebook. This is not a mass hysteria caused by social media, some have said. Some have said social media is making this thing worse. No, this happens all the time. If you look at history, it could, as I said, goes back to the Salem witch trials and even beyond that. There have been at least a dozen cases of mass hysteria around the world since the Salem witch trials. That was only the most notorious one in American history, but there are others. You can look them up. Pakistan, India, Southeast Asia. There are a number of countries that have gone through this. Now, I'm not going to suggest that Christine Ford was not in the situation that she was. In fact, I'm not going to suggest that even in the McMartin case. It's just that what happens is with your memory, it plays tricks on you, especially when everybody around you is trying to capitalize on it or is using discredited methods in a therapy session. Now, it may be completely valid in the case of Dr. Ford. The therapist may be completely accurate. And I firmly believe that Dr. Ford thinks that Brett Kavanaugh did this. That's why she passes the polygraph test. That's the thing about these mass hysteria cases. That's the thing about these repressed memory sessions. By the way, it was done in the repressed memory session that they're referring to by the therapist was done in the 90s when this was the vogue. It was not done recently. This was done over 20 years ago. And I have no doubt that Dr. Ford believes everything that she says. That's why she passes the polygraph. A polygraph doesn't actually tell the truth or lies. It tells what the person believes the truth is the lie. But what happens is you go into these sessions, in these repressed therapy sessions. As I said, I'm not a psychologist. I'm not suggesting anything. But this is what happens typically, is the therapist brings information out and then says, well, could this have happened? Could that have happened? And it plays tricks on the mind. And this is why it's been discredited by the American Psychology Association, because they know they've done studies. Numerous studies that say it's very easy for a patient to bring forth memories that didn't exist or didn't involve situations that they say it did. In other words, the situation involving the incident that Dr. Ford involved may have been more exaggerated than what she had said. Remember, everyone at the time was drunk. Everyone at the time was goofing around in a party. And I can tell you, in situations like that, many times women feel uncomfortable and threatened. This was a situation that actually happened in a New York Life office some years ago. And I experienced it, where there were some women involved in a trip that I was on. I've talked about this on the show, which is why I feel like I can talk about it in this regard today, where everyone was loud and boisterous and been drinking. And there were two women agents on this bus, and they felt uncomfortable and later on went to the boss and said, hey, listen, I don't think we should be drinking and behaving in this manner in a company trip. And the managing partner says, I agree. Sent out a memo to everyone that there would be no more alcohol on these trips and that the trip wouldn't be done in that manner, in that respect. And we had to respect women feeling uncomfortable in that situation. Now, that at that time, there was no accusation of sexual harassment or anything like that. But the managing partner realized the potential danger that presented it to women, because women do feel uncomfortable in situations where men are loud, boisterous, drunk. And there have been situations in other respect that where women did get sexually harassed in that kind of a situation. Men act irresponsibly in some cases, particularly when there's alcohol involved. And women do too. No doubt about that. So I agree that Dr. Ford may have been pushed down on a bed, may have been in a situation where she felt uncomfortable and her sexuality may have been violated in that situation. But that doesn't mean Brett Kavanaugh is guilty of anything, any more than the McMartin preschool people were guilty of anything. And that came out in the trial. hundreds of counts of molestation turned out to be false, where people interpreted something that wasn't, where children were encouraged to come forward and talk about things. This is going on now with Brett Kavanaugh. Did you know that there were letters gone out to anyone who was contacted, people worked, people who went to school with Brett Kavanaugh? Oh, did this happen? Did that happen? There are literally dozens, maybe even hundreds of people now searching for that smoking gun that proves that Brett Kavanaugh somehow raped women or acted in irresponsible fashion or were a member of a gang of rapists going around at the time. There were huge plot holes with this person who's, I believe her name is Mrs. Swetnick. By the way, I should disclose this. Swetnick worked at the same company that I did and during the time that I did. Now, we were in different offices. She was on the East Coast, I was on the West Coast, but we all knew with the case. And this was also in the mind of the managing partner, I'm sure, when he said no more alcohol on company trips and this kind of thing. She was involved in a case at New York Life, which I have never disclosed before. And I should before I do this story, or at least talk about it. Now, this is why I suggest that we should listen to women. This is why I've been a proponent of the Me Too movement. Women who are harassed or on the casting room couch, in the case of Weinstein, which is where I did most of my shows, these kind of situations need to be called out, and people need to be arrested if they raped women, they sexually molested women, or they put women in compromising situations where they felt they needed to do something sexually to gain approval or promotion on a job. Absolutely. But when you get into a situation where someone says this could have happened all of this time ago and I can't provide any evidence, I didn't go to anybody at the time, you have a different situation. And people, we need to have that kind of conversation. There needs to be what they call a nuanced conversation about the depth and credibility of these cases in relationship to an actual rape or casting room couch, as I've discussed. They're completely different. Now, there are many women who are out there on the mainstream media. You watch CNN, MSNBC, some of these other main media stations or mass media stations, as I call them. They're sitting on their stations clucking their tongues and wagging their fingers, blaming men for being men. This is what men are. They tend to be louder and boisterous. And in some cases, it gets out of hand. And in those cases, I completely support women protecting themselves and going to law enforcement. But it needs to be done at the time. It can't be done 36 years later during a political investigation where your accusation is at best thin and you have no evidence to back it up. If you go to the police the morning after an incident happens, then there's a lot of credibility to it. Then the police can, at the time, investigate all the people involved, easily find who was in the room, who did what, launch an investigation, and they will do that. But when you come forward 36 years later, or you come forward with repressed memory sessions where your credibility is reliant upon a psychoanalytic therapy, as it was in the McMartin case, where facts such as the accuser, Judy Johnson, in her case, being diagnosed for acute schizophrenia and chronic alcoholism, you have to say to yourself, there's some credibility issue here. And you have to understand that sometimes human beings get involved in a mass hysteria situation. There were dozens of these cases that suddenly flooded the California courts at the time because everyone panicked. Satanic rituals, rapes, anal penetration, as I said, horrible situations, ridiculous claims. And people started to think there's a wild sex cult. There's satanic rituals going on in my trade school. And you say to a child, especially, did so-and-so ever do this? Oh, yeah. Oh, he did this. Or there was all kinds of, and they had situations where puppets were brought forth to interview children. It was a crazy time. And it has nothing to do with social media. It has everything to do with the fact that the human mind plays tricks. So I wanted you to take it in that context. Questions have to be asked, and people have to make statements on the record. Because it suddenly becomes entertainment. People turn on the TV to learn about what's going on with the Kavanaugh case. People turn, like in the 80s, people turned on the TV every night. Every media station was playing stories about so-and-so in different preschools from around Los Angeles area and around California. And it became crazy time. It became a sort of entertainment for the people. And it became so ingrained in everybody's mind that people actually at the time in the 80s started to think that all daycare centers were centers for child molestation. It was that bad. And I'm seeing the same thing happen with this Me Too movement. It's become hijacked by mass hysteria, where legitimate cases are now being mixed in with cases of repressed memory with no evidence and a delay in time that's so ridiculous that it's hard to imagine. I want to talk about that next. We'll be right back.
Sometimes I wonder why I spend the lonely night dreaming of a song.
Have you ever heard of the term bread and circuses? Back in the Roman Empire, emperors and wealthy senators and patrons of the arts would often entertain the crowds. There's a couple cases that are in Roman history. I think Herodotus writes about them. Petronius wrote about it. One case was Julius Caesar. Or was it Crassus? It doesn't matter. Feasted 10,000 plebeians, means average people, the peasants of Rome, for something like 30 days in Rome. They'd set up tables around numerous public sites, and then the Crassus or one of these wealthy generals would pay to have bread sent out to the people. Or sometimes they would put on shows at the Colosseum later on when the Colosseum was built. This is in the time past Crassus and Julius Caesar. They would put on an entertainment spectacle at their expense just to entertain the masses. Almost always in those cases, not necessarily deliberate, but it was at a time of great problems in the Roman Empire. In other words, there were wars overseas, many people killed for various reasons. There may have been cities that were destroyed or run over or overrun by barbarians. And so as a result, what the generals and other senators would do would pass out these bread and entertainment. It was called bread and circuses to keep people entertained, to keep their mind off the horrors that were going on in the Roman Empire and the problems. Because they didn't want the people of Rome or Roman citizens to know about all of the horrible malfeasance that was going on in the Roman Empire at the time. It got worse as the empire degenerated into moral depravity. In other words, as the leaders began to become more ineffective and more morally damaged, and where they would let their own vices take over, they paid off the people, so to speak, with bread and circuses. I find it interesting, just as a historical person, as a historian-oriented mind that I have, that things are going on in the world which are significant, which are in some ways horrible to someone who is more serious-minded. For instance, we have $21 trillion in debt. We have no way to pay it off, at least not that I can think of. Even if the economy takes off as successfully as it has under Donald Trump in the last 2 years, it can't possibly begin to pay it off. We have a significant problem with debt in this country. It is causing problems for us at the gas pump, at the supermarket aisle, at the cost of housing, at the cost of wages. Wages are never higher, but so is housing, so is food, the basic necessities of life. people don't have the disposable income they have, even though if they've had more success in getting larger pay and a larger benefit package. It's been dug into by the depreciation of the dollar, by the increase in costs to take care of ourselves, the increase in healthcare costs, and most of it's generated from the massive debt. One of the most successful things about the Clinton economy, and I'll say this for the record, that Bill Clinton was able to do was reduce the overall government spending, not the debt, the spending. In other words, he presented a balanced budget because Newt Gingrich pressured him to do so. When a government does this, when it begins to take in more money than it spends, it has a net effect on the economy because the value of the dollar, in other words, the stability of the American economy is based on the faith of the American dollar, becomes more stable, and as a result, the economy begins to grow. Even if the debt is substantial, if the government isn't spending as much money and isn't spending more than it has the net effect of the value of its money becoming greater. And so people have more disposable income. The necessities of life become less expensive. Even if it doesn't matter what the price is, the net cost to them is less. What we have is just the opposite right now. Our government is spending way more money than it's taking in right now. We are spending money like we're printing it in the basement of the White House, which we are. We're spending, I believe, we have 800,000 in spending more, 800 million in, how does that go again? 800? No, it's 800 billion in spending more than we're taking in. It's a reckless amount. Now, it's not as bad as it's been, but it's still substantial. And when you have $21 trillion in debt, which is effectively 20 times the amount of money we take in taxes, you have a problem. And the stability of the American economy is right on the edge. And I don't think people realize it. And that's not to say that what's going on with Brett Kavanaugh is a deliberate attempt for us to take our minds, much as it was in the Roman Empire and the bread and circuses. As it is a function of that, as it is, we need something to turn to, because it's not real interesting to talk about the debt, is it? It's not real interesting to talk about our overseas problems. We have troops in the field over in Afghanistan in a situation that's untenable. There is no way the United States is prepared to commit the time, money, blood, and treasure to do what we need to do in Afghanistan. Yet we still keep troops there. Yet we still have people getting killed there. We have people getting killed in African countries where most people can't point to on a map. These are countries that we're defending our interests, our economic interests, because we're involved in so many things around the world. There are horrors going on. The Congress right now is discussing a situation in Rohingya and Myanmar in Southeast Asia, where people are being slaughtered and carnage is nonstop. You don't hear much about it in the news because it's not really a pleasant thing to talk about. Instead, let's all talk about Brett Kavanaugh. Let's all talk about a crazy situation where an accusation where he was in charge of a rape ring in high school that college girls were involved in. Does that make any sense to you? But it's entertaining. It's entertaining as hell. You turn on the news and that's all anyone talks about. All the talking heads are talking about it. Someone did a study, something like 90% of mass media stories are basically stories that attack Donald Trump or people in his administration. It's a ridiculous amount because it's entertaining. Isn't it? And Donald Trump, he's entertaining as hell. He did a press conference yesterday, and he basically laid into the mass media, and all the conservatives and all the people that are Trump supporters are going, yeah, yeah, cheering on the blood and circuses they've now been presented. In reality, in respect to what's going on with Kavanaugh, in respect to what's going on with the Donald Trump press conference and the things that he says on Twitter, these are minor things. It's not significant that Brett Kavanaugh had this thing. Why can't the Congress just simply take a vote? You know, Clarence Thomas didn't get a Judiciary Committee hearing approval. When he went before the circus that he was involved in, and everyone listened to Anita Hill, which had a much more substantial case than Dr. Ford does. The Judiciary Committee that was hearing Anita Hill did not give a recommendation to Clarence Thomas. They told the president and the Senate as a whole, no, Clarence Thomas should not be a Supreme Court justice. And in the end, the senators voted still to confirm Clarence Thomas. Why are we hesitating with Kavanaugh? Everyone says, well, we shouldn't rush. We're not rushing. He had a full committee hearing. We had 6 weeks to interview him. There have been numerous FBI investigations into his background. Nobody's rushing. Why can't it just go to a vote? There's no reason why the Judiciary Committee even needs to meet. There is no reason why the Judiciary Committee just can't simply refer it back to the Senate and say, no, we don't recommend him. There's too many credibility issues that are going against Brett Kavanaugh. These three women are credible, are believable, and so therefore we should not recommend Judge Kavanaugh to be the Supreme Court judge. No reason why he can't be confirmed. The Senate as a whole is completely in the control of the Republican hands. There's no reason at all. As a matter of fact, a number of Democrats have said they're going to vote for him, that his record goes beyond the pale. Why are we hesitating? Well, because it's entertaining. Because no one wants to say, oh, we're going to confirm him even though there's these accusations. Because everyone is afraid. Everyone is walking on eggshells. It's very much like the Roman Empire back in the bread and circuses days. Everyone was worried about the situation with the Hun outside the gates of Rome. Everyone was worried about barbarian raids. Everyone was worried about the horrors in Pompeii, the natural disasters that were facing the Roman Empire. Everyone was worried about the coin, but it was a hell of a lot more entertaining to watch somebody get slaughtered in the ring at the Colosseum. And it's the same thing with the Brett Kavanaugh thing. You try and discuss. And I've known this from ratings on my own show. You try and discuss significant differences in the economy about why debt and government spending is in a direct relationship to the value of your spending money. And nobody tunes in. Nobody shares the show. But boy, you talk a show about the Me Too movement, it's all over. The two things, if you want ratings on a podcast or a radio show, to bump your ratings, talk about either guns or sex. Or the Bible. Those three things will drive your ratings through the roof. If you talk about the economy, if you talk about the net relationship to spending of money or the value of the dollar in relation to the government, nobody tunes in. It just dries up. Nobody comments. It's like what you do on Facebook. If you print a story and you solicit comments, depending on the nature of the story, you get a fair amount of comments. You put a meme or a funny picture. One of the most popular things on my own Facebook site in the last 3 months, a picture of William Shatner saying that he should be the sponsor or the spokesman for Trump's space program. Thousands of people listened to that thing or clicked on it and liked it. Thousands. You do a story on the economy, 8 people. It's just the way it is. It's not faulting anyone. It's just our understanding the reality of entertainment in relationship to what's going on. What do they tell you about kids in school? Oh, we need to make education more entertaining for the child instead of more disciplined. And as a result, learning gets suffered. It's the same thing with the American people. That's why no one's educated about civics or politics or even the Supreme Court nomination process, because everyone's entertained and everyone's enjoying themselves and nobody's realizing, well, we'll just take a vote. There's no reason why the Senate can't take a vote tomorrow. There's no reason why the Judiciary Committee has to meet again even. Just simply take a vote. If you don't support them, don't support them. But see, there's the entertainment value. The senators don't want to appear as if they're, insensitive to women's issues. Why? I don't know. Because there were many women who support Brett Kavanaugh. Because I don't believe that women vote based on gender. I believe women vote for the same way that men vote. They vote on either right wing or left wing, conservative or Democrat, liberal or Republican. Makes no difference. They vote the way their conscience does. or their politics does. They don't vote because they are a certain demographic. That's a ridiculous notion. But the senators buy into it. And it's, again, all about bread and circuses. Let's keep people entertained. Let's not talk about real issues because, frankly, we can't get them to be interested. They'd rather go to the beach or listen to Brett Kavanaugh be accused of being a sexual predator. Got to talk about Trump and the United Nations. And it's kind of off topic, but it really relates to it, and I'll explain it. It's really all about respect. We'll be right back.
Forever, I'll hold you close in my arms. I can't resist your charms.
Gifts of all sizes help to ensure that Liberty Never Sleeps remains a relevant, vital resource across our nation. More than 70% of the funding for Liberty Never Sleeps comes from our listeners through the generosity of membership support by donating at Patreon.com. Join our Insiders Club for $10 a month and gain access to private shows and editorial columns. Go to LibertyNeverSleeps.com and click on the Donate Now button at the top of the page or on the button at our Facebook site. Thank you for your continued support. And we're back. You know the funny thing? The press conference yesterday, everyone was talking about Donald Trump and the people laughing at the United Nations. They're saying that, well, because some people laughed at his comment, his rather over, I'll be first to admit, his over-the-top comment that his administration accomplished more in 2 years than any previous administration. They're making a big deal of it. No one respects the United States anymore. No one respects the United States anymore. No. What happens is, it's not about respect. You had Barack Obama who would go around apologizing for everything America did. Oh, America's a terrible country. America's, you know, thinks that they're exceptional, but every country thinks they're exceptional. And America should apologize. And, you know, we've been supporting these dictators in the Middle East, and we should be supporting democracy. And so what world leaders would do, would come up to Barack Obama and say, oh, you're such a great guy. Thank you so much for saying that. And they confuse that with respect. No, that's obsequiousness. It's a term. Look it up. Obsequious. That's being a bootlicker. That's not respect. And then because they knew Obama was a pushover, well, you know, you're going to apologize for this, basically, as the argument went. Well, why don't you make it up to us in this trade deal? Well, why don't you do business in a certain way? And of course, Barack Obama was happy to oblige because he believed America's always been wrong. And so he would make ridiculous trade deals. Everybody knew it, too. And everybody in the world knew it. And everybody would say to him, hey, my buddy, Barack Obama, let's talk about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Let's talk about NAFTA, like with Bill Clinton. Yeah, you know what? You're right. You're right. America hasn't been good. But you know what? You know what you could make it up to us with? You could take this import tax off. You could take this trade deal and make it a different way. And you could help employ. You remember when Barack Obama went down to Latin America and gave Brazilian and Venezuelan oil interests huge leases off the coast of America and denied it to American companies? Oh, that was such... He was making it up to third world countries. That's not respect. Okay? Respect is when you go down and you say, listen, you got people are going to be put on notice. We're not making these trade deals anymore. And they get mad. They make public statements. You know, Donald Trump's acting like a crazy man and this and this and that. But privately, what happens is says, okay, well, what do you want? And we'll give you something back. That's respect. That's true respect. They respect the power of his office. They respect the American economy because for the first time in a long time, we've had a president know full well that the American economy would run roughshod just about over any other economy. And if they don't play ball, they could be destroyed by it. Take a look at the European economies. It's a joke individually. Great Britain, France, Germany, They're nothing compared to the United States. They're less than 10% in some cases. So if the American economy, if an American president says, hey, listen, we're going to go trade war with you. We're going to increase duties on all your crap unless you reduce the duties on ours. Believe me, it turns heads. And yeah, they're going to laugh at the UN. They're going to make jokes behind his back. But to his front, to his face, it's a little bit different. And the funny thing is when they come on interviews, France, Macron, for instance, other leaders, the Israeli leader, when they were talking about the Palestinian situation, was on Bret Baier the other night. They talk about Trump in glowing terms. They say, well, you know, I was shocked. I thought Donald Trump would be this person. But when we got into private meetings and he knew the situation better than I did, better than some of my own people did. That's true respect. That's not bootlicking. See, Obama was used to bootlicking. He had a bunch of people around him like that. Because he was the kind of a person that was a control freak, had to do everything himself. A lot of presidents are. That's not a negative thing. That's how they get to be president. They're perfectionists and whatnot. But it also has a problem, too. And I've known CEOs like this. I've done business with them. What happens is they tend to get surrounded by yes men, obsequious people that know that if you say no to them, it's going to be an unpleasant process. You might not even have a job. Donald Trump is a notorious quick firer. It's one of the reasons why he was picked and selected for The Apprentice show. As a matter of fact, if you look into it, he would be quick to drop the hammer on people. Most successful CEOs are. You know, there's the mentality that, well, if you have a bad employee, you should basically retrain him because turnover is an expensive process. Bullshit. I can tell you that the most successful companies get rid of people right away when they're no good in the first 90 days. Successful companies. They don't hang on to bad people. Government hangs on to bad people. Government hangs on to bad people a ridiculous amount of time. Guys who've been terrible at their job for 20 years stay job in government work. That's why government is so bad. That's why the DMV and other government bureaucrats are so horrible, because there's no way you can fire them. It's about respect. And true respect comes from a mutual understanding of where you are on the table. Donald Trump says, my economy is 5 or 10 times the size of yours. Unless you do business on these terms, we're going to hurt you and hurt you bad. Now, Canada is fighting back. Trudeau, as a matter of fact, has made some situations where we might actually have a serious trade war with Canada. But China came to the table. Most of these other nations come to the table. Oh, yeah, Donald Trump says, we're going to go to war with Chinese steel. And the Chinese people say, well, we're going to put tariffs on you. And that happens for a couple weeks. But in the end, they knuckle under. They have to. That's true respect. That's understanding an honest appraisal of where you are in the negotiating table. A strong negotiator comes to the table with far more than he wants, the actual will get. A weak negotiator immediately drops his pants and gives people what they want and says, oh, I came away with a good deal. The American people are going to get jobs. Yeah, but we could have gotten 10 times the jobs if you come to the table ready for a trade war. And you might have to fight some of those trade battles. You might have to have tax. And yes, during a trade war, people get hurt. But in the end, there will be far more people helped by Donald Trump's toughness than Barack Obama's obsequiousness. It's a fact. Take a look at our economy. Take a look at the way world leaders talk about Donald Trump in interviews. Oh yeah, they'll snicker at the table. Well, who gives a rat's ass? Most of those people are dressed in wacky clothes and have economies that basically the state of Connecticut could do in an average day. So who cares what they do? Who cares what they are laughing at? My God, these countries are committing genocide on a daily basis. Half their population are living in huts we provided for them. So what do we care what they have to say? The only thing that matters is what goes on at the negotiating table. And Donald Trump is a master of that. And proof of that is the American economy. Everyone's working in this economy. The problem with the economy, and what we haven't addressed yet, is what I said in the earlier segment. Bread and circuses. We're paying too much attention to Brett Kavanaugh, not enough to our national debt, not enough to our national spending habits, not enough to the looming problem of Obamacare. We still haven't gotten rid of that thing. It's an anchor on this economy. When is the last president ever addressed the American people about pharmaceutical prices? When is the last Republican even went to war with the pharmaceutical industry? A lot of people don't even talk about this. Donald Trump publicly has said, we're going after the pharmaceutical companies. We're going after the drug prices. We're going to start negotiating on prices so that we could get a better price on products to the American people. You don't think that has an effect on your health insurance prices? You don't think that will eventually come down to your pocket? Of course it will. Of course it will. And nobody's talking about it. I haven't seen really a story on it. You got to search for it. No Republican has ever talked like that. No Republican has ever been tough with the pharmaceutical industry or negotiated pricing. They've basically paid them off. That's one of the reasons why our health insurance prices are so high. Not to mention our Medicare is going bankrupt because of it. Medicare is a self-funded program, right? You pay a lot of tax out of your paycheck to pay for Medicare. I think it's something like 18% of your check, plus your employer matches 18%. That's a lot of money, man, especially over a lifetime. Medicare was always self-funded and always sufficiently funded that we had no problem with Medicare. Medicare was going along just fine. Then George Bush, the people and the pharmaceutical companies ginned up the problem of pricing. A lot of people don't know this, but the pharmaceutical companies raised dramatically pricing of pharmaceuticals in the 1990s. And people were having to pay for it. People were going and getting their health care taken care of. They had, back then, we had $500 and $1,000 deductibles. I know, I sold it. Not to go off the track here, but I'm going to discuss this. People were going to the doctor and everything was pretty much taken care of. And then they get their pharmaceutical bill. The doctor said, well, you need this medication and you need that. So the guy go to the pharmacy and get hit with socked with $300, $500 pharmaceutical bills. And people were getting tired of it. And the insurance that covered those, in those cases, were going through the roof because the pharmaceuticals company had people by the short hairs, especially in Medicare, where people were on fixed income and saying, I can't afford $300 a month for this pill. I can't afford $500 a month. And what happened? It was called a donut hole, right? And George Bush passed the bill called a support bill for Medicare where you could get your pharmaceuticals paid for it. Then all of a sudden, the pharmaceutical companies went wacky. And prices through the roof. And you're paying for it. Why do you think a drug costs $3,000 here but only $300 in India or Canada? You think it's any different? No. It's because the government pays for it here. That's respect. That's when we talk about respect, we talk about negotiating from strength. Donald Trump knows full well he has the strength of the United States government behind him. The United States government is paying for everything. He doesn't have to pay for it. All he has to do is motion to Congress that we need to change our pharmaceutical benefit bill. Oh, watch how fast prices will come down. And they know it. They'll negotiate. Donald Trump knows how to negotiate from strength. And that's why he's getting things for the American people. And that's why people respect him. Despite what you think, the United States is better respected. And proof of that is the advantage that we are in trade deals. The proof of that is the way other countries are knuckling under to us. For instance, North Korea. North Korea was shooting off missiles every day for I don't know for how many years. George Bush, Barack Obama, made no difference, Republican or Democrat. They wanted their way. And all of a sudden, they came to a grinding halt. Why? Because Donald Trump went to the negotiating table and says, look, you know full well if you go to nuclear war with the United States, you won't survive. We will. Now, you want to go down that path? I got a button on my desk. I could vaporize you in a second. My button works. You're blowing up mountains and you can't even get your atomic weapons straight. You want to play that game? You want to go down that road? Okay, fine. I have no hesitation in pushing that button. If you threaten the United States, I'm going to act on it. And let me tell you something. He was the first president to say that and say it publicly. And you know what? Woo! They came to the negotiating table. And it was in their best interest. It was in their best interest because you know what? If they did business with the United States and they stopped shooting off missiles, North Korea wouldn't look like it the way it does. Dark at night. And they know it. And Kim Jong-un probably came to the sudden realization, was like, why am I acting like an idiot when I can just simply do business with the United States and stop being an asshole all the time? Because no one ever told him. No one ever put it to that term. It's going on around the world in a number of ways. And now we're going after Iran. John Bolton, don't fuck with us. He'll do it. This guy's crazy. This guy will do it. And, of course, all the celebrities don't realize what he's doing. All the pundits. Oh, my God. You know, this same thing happened with Reagan. Russia's an evil empire. Soviets went, holy cow. We better do something. That guy's crazy. We better go to the negotiating table. Every other president before Reagan. Oh, well, the Russians are bad. You remember Afghanistan? They invaded another country, Russia. What did Jimmy Carter do? Oh, well, we'll do some grain embargoes and some economic sanctions. We won't go to the Olympics. What the hell is that? Impotence. Oh, yeah, they all loved Carter, but they didn't respect him. They didn't care about him. They didn't believe anything he said. Neither did the American people. We got rid of him. Ronald Reagan came along. Called it an evil empire. Guess what happened? Berlin Wall comes down. Soviet Empire don't exist anymore. Same thing will happen with Iran. The same thing with North Korea. But you got to support the president. You got to say, yeah, know what? He's doing the right thing. It's all about respect, folks. And this is going on with the Brett Kavanaugh thing. No one respects the situation. Brett Kavanaugh needs to come out. And I'm glad he did that interview on Fox News. I'm glad he's going to get a day today in the Judiciary Committee. I hope he goes after him. Do you remember when Clarence Thomas got the Supreme Court nomination? Do you know it wasn't the Judiciary Committee meeting, which he didn't get, the approval process? That's not what made him Supreme Court Justice. What made him Supreme Court Justice is he came out in that meeting and he went after those committee members. And he put it right on Joe Biden. He put it right on Howard Metzenbaum. He put it right on Ted Kennedy. This is a damn witch hunt and it's a high-tech lynching and you guys ought to be ashamed of yourselves for playing into that. And that was it. Clarence Thomas became a Supreme Court Justice. Why? Because people respected him. Maybe made jokes behind his back. But when they came to the negotiating table and it came to that vote, people voted for him. Brett Kavanaugh needs to do the same today. Respect. You need to strike. That's why I tell people, never apologize. It's a sign of weakness. And be careful about what you say. Say what you mean and mean what you say. And never apologize. It's a sign of weakness. We got to take a break. I got one last word about the Bill Cosby thing, and then that's the end of this week. I'll be right back. Okay, I'm a little over, so I'm going to be very quick about this. I've gotten a number of messages on Facebook about this. I want to say for the record that I'm not going to change my position on Bill Cosby. All right? He's guilty and he needs to go to jail. And it's a shame that what he did is only calling for a sentence of up to 10 years. But I have to say for the record, and I stand behind this, putting an 80-year-old man in jail when revoking his bail, when in every particular case like this, that someone is allowed bail, that's not right. And I'll stand behind it. It doesn't matter what the charge is. It doesn't matter what you think of Bill Cosby. It doesn't matter of the heinousness or salaciousness of his crime. He deserves the same respect on the law as anyone else does. If Bill Cosby was white and liberal, he would have been able to get bail. And the only reason Cosby was sent without bail is because he is a public figure and he has made speeches. There was no way that a guy like him would have ever even come to justice had he not been the person that he is. And I'll state that for the record. I'll stand behind it because you know why? I'm intellectually consistent in my arguments. I have said this about many cases and many times. And everyone's changing their opinion because Bill Cosby built, you know. Bill Cosby would not be in jail if he was a liberal. I firmly believe that. No question about that. I know that he made a speech, and then suddenly after that speech, that's when the charges began. He had been doing what he was doing for 40 years, and he should have been jailed 40 years ago. But he stayed out. Why? Because everyone believed he was black and a minority group, and they looked the other way because he was a celebrity and he was one of them. And then suddenly when it came out that he wasn't, that was when the charges began. I stand behind that. I firmly believe that. That doesn't mean I don't believe he just shouldn't be in jail. I don't believe that he's not guilty. I believe he's guilty as sin. But he should have been jailed 30 years ago. Not now. Not when he's 80. Not when he's got a milky eye and a cane. Someone like that gets bail. He's not a threat to the community. The only thing he's a threat to is the diapers he wears. And the only reason he didn't get bail is because he made a speech in which he suggested that black people should be responsible for themselves. I firmly believe this, and I'm not going to change my opinion of that. That doesn't mean I think he should be out. That doesn't mean I think he's not guilty. And if you have a problem with the fact that he only got 3 to 10 years, then take it up with the law of the state that he was convicted in, not with me. All right? It doesn't matter. It's the law. It's the Constitution. The Constitution says a man deserves bail unless there's a risk of flight or a danger to the community. He is neither. There is no way Cosby could get out of the country and flee someplace. He has no money left. He spent it all on lawyers. Not to mention the fact you simply remove his passport. You don't put him in friggin' jail. Guy's practically a cripple. You can see it. And I'm standing behind that. And you can send me all the messages you want. Oh, how can you say he's not guilty? I didn't say that. How can you say he doesn't deserve jail time? I didn't say that. He does. How can you say that his sentence was light? Because the sentencing guidelines in that state are far less than what they gave him. It has nothing to do with Cosby or the crime. It has everything to do with the law. The law has to be impartial and fair with anyone. And if you got a problem with that, take it up with the state, not with me. Yes, the penalty for that, what he did, should be more severe. But that's not the issue. The issue is if 100 people convicted at his crime at his age were doing time or had been convicted, they would get bail and they would have a lesser sentence. That's the guideline. And to say that just because it's Bill Cosby or just because the crime is salacious, that he doesn't deserve the same justice anyone else has is wrong. That's the last I'll say. Last I'll say on the Cosby subject. All right? And you can howl all you want. Oh, you know, he deserves more time. Yeah, he does. But that's not the guideline of the state. And that's why I say that punishment was excessive. It's not excessive in what it should be. It's excessive in regards to the law. And the law is far more important than your opinion of Bill Cosby. That's more. I say this about Kavanaugh. What's more important is the damage being done to the Constitution, not Brett Kavanaugh. The Brett Kavanaughs, like the Clarence Thomas, come and go. Clarence Thomas right now is considering retirement, I hear. Didn't take long, did it? That went quick. But the damage done to our Constitution and the process by which we select the Supreme Court has now resounded to today with the Brett Kavanaugh hearing. It's more the process itself and the law is more important than any one individual or any one individual's or your thinking of what justice should be. We're done for today. I'm out of time. If you like the show, if you want to listen to more of this show, you can donate $10 at our Patreon site. Believe me, we need that money because with the Google Analytics and Facebook and the way it works, if you're not spending money with these guys, that's it. I've seen a tremendous drop in new listeners, not in our existing listener base or the stuff in social media. And the way you can help is by donating money and by sharing the show. Because what happens is because of Google Analytics and the games that they're playing, shows like this, it's very difficult to get new listeners. You get moved down. The ones that they get moved up are the ones paying big money, like CNN and stuff like that. They're all of a sudden, they're at the top of YouTube's list. Why is that? Well, because they're playing games. And it's done to promote their own financial viability and to promote their own liberal agenda. And we've got to fight that. And you do it by sharing the show, telling other people about it, and donating money so I can spend on advertising, because advertising is still protected. Anyway, we're out of time. If you want to donate to the show, go to our website, go to the top of our Facebook or Twitter feeds. There's links there that you can do. It's through Patreon. They've been really good to us. Anyway, I'm out of time for the week. Take care. I'll see you on Monday. And for those of you on the private show, I'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.